All right.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Monday, everybody. Today is April 13th, 2026. And our top story this morning, the first round of peace talks held in Pakistan between the United States and Iran have gone precisely nowhere. Not really a big surprise there, but there's been a lot of developments ever since, and it's moving markets this morning. The U.S. sent two destroyers through the Strait of Hormuz immediately after those talks broke down. And President Trump posted on Truth Social, among other things that we really wish he'd stop posting about, but he posted that the U.S. had begun mine-clearing operations in the Strait of Hormuz. Now, that's important because the southern part of the Strait of Hormuz, which contains most of the traditionally used shipping lanes, were supposedly mined by the Iranians. And ever since those mines were laid, the Iranians have tried to do this whole toll booth thing where they say, if you use this northern corridor where you have to ask our permission first and pay us a $2 million bribe, then you can traverse the strait through a little lane that we have created. The U.S. is obviously not keen on that idea, and so we are clearing that minefield, or at least we have begun to clear that minefield. Also, again, the whole toll booth thing, President Trump not happy about that. He announced a complete blockade of Iranian shipping. Now, this has always had me kind of scratching my head since this conflict began. The Iranians closed the strait. They mined it. They attacked boats. None of the boats were willing to traverse the strait. The only ships that have been getting out were pretty much Iranian ships. And the U.S. has had this massive battle fleet assembled right there at the exit. And we've been letting these Iranian ships just kind of stroll by while Iran denies Saudi and Emirati and Bahrain and Iraq and Kuwait oil from getting out. That never really made sense to me. Why? Because the United States is fighting a war with one eye on the Brent crude ticker. That's not really a recipe for victory. So it looks like the president has finally had enough of that. They're going to start, or at least they say, as of 10 a.m. Eastern time this morning, they're going to start blockading any ships heading to or from Iranian ports, and also any ships that have paid the Iranian extortion, the toll, whatever you want to call it. So we don't really know what that means. That involves ships from all over the world, flagged in other countries, crewed by other countries. I guess we're just going to have to wait and see what happens there. Now, Iran has come out and said if that happens in retaliation, the Iranians would claim they would destroy every port in the Gulf, in the Persian Gulf, meaning the UAE, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, Qatar, Kuwait, all those countries. Basically, we'll retaliate against everybody. So obviously, this is not a good development. The market is reacting to this. We've got oil back above $104 a barrel as of the making of this video. Stocks are down. But you know what? The reaction to the market to the downside is not as intense as the reaction to the upside was on these prospects for peace. The market continues to have that bias to the upside here. So we'll see what happens throughout the course of the trading day. But as of right now, that's where things stand in the Middle East. But we've got a lot of other things going on in the world as well. World Liberty Financial. We got to talk about this one. This is the crypto company that was set up by the Trump family. This story was in the news. It's affecting Bitcoin. Pay attention to this one. I think we're going to be hearing a lot about this in the days and months, possibly even years ahead. World Liberty Financial puts out this WLFI, the World Liberty token. And World Liberty minted billions of these tokens, deposited them on a crypto platform called Dolomite. Now, that crypto platform, Dolomite, is run by a guy, founded by a guy who is affiliated with World Liberty Financial. So it's a little bit of a circular deal. They deposit these billions of World Liberty tokens onto this platform, and then they borrow $75 million from Dolomite, basically draining all of the liquidity from the Dolomite pool. They move that money right over to Coinbase, which is basically the fiat off-ramp where you can trade the stable coins you got on Dolomite for U.S. dollar cash. In other words, they looted Dolomite using their own minted token. They screwed a lot of people when they did that. Now, of course, they're saying, oh, don't worry, you know, our position is safe, funds are safe, all that other stuff that they always say. But here's the rub. If World Liberty token keeps dropping, and it's gone from 31 cents down to 8, so it has dropped significantly. If it keeps dropping, it's going to trigger an auto liquidation clause, in that Dolomite contract, which means it will automatically dump those billions of World Liberty tokens. That is not a very liquid market. It will crash the price of World Liberty, and it will also crash the Dolomite platform. In other words, it'll be like basically the Terra Luna collapse from the last crypto cycle, except this time with the involvement of a sitting U.S. president. This is going to be a big story if it happens, right? It's like, okay, imagine FTX happened, but Sam Bankman-Fried was also leader of the free world. Guys, it's gross. It stinks. But look, President Trump is operating as if he's already granted himself a blanket pardon for anything and everything. And it's the golden age of fraud. It's the only way to look at it. Coincidentally, Justin Sun is now out complaining. Justin Sun, he was the architect of the Tron collapse in the last crypto cycle. And then he bought himself a presidential pardon by investing tens of millions of dollars in World Liberty Financial tokens. Now he's out complaining that World Liberty Financial has frozen his assets, which boo freaking who. I don't care that some crook has had his assets frozen. The real story, though, there is that World Liberty is capable of freezing the assets, that they give themselves a backdoor to do that, and they're willing to use it. It's just a mess over there. It really is. It is the golden age of fraud. It's the only way to describe it. Meanwhile, the Federal Reserve is finally addressing private credit. Over the weekend, the Fed sent a questionnaire to banks and insurance companies seeking details on their private credit exposure. Now, this is interesting because the Federal Reserve thus far, as it's come to the meltdown of private credit, has been all our banks are well capitalized and well positioned and, you know, blah, 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 transitory, all that other crap, like just basically mindless platitudes dismissing the issue. Now they're going to the big banks who have lent all the money to the private credit issuers who have then lent it on to companies who can't pay the debt back and said, yo, banks, what is your exposure to this? And also, it's important to note the insurance companies, because a lot of these private equity and private credit firms have bought insurance companies and then loaded up the asset side of the balance sheet in those insurance companies with their own holding companies and their own debt products. Conflict of interest much? You better believe it. So the Fed is finally getting involved there. Welcome to the party, pal. This may have something to do with why Goldman Sachs is down so much on what was otherwise an excellent earnings report, at least as far as I've been able to tell this morning. Goldman reported one of their best quarters ever, but the stock, the last I looked, was down almost 5% on that news. Possibly some worries about private credit, maybe some loan loss provisions going on there. Just having a hard time finding the negative in that Goldman earnings release, I'm not going to lie. Over in Europe, we had big developments also over the weekend. In Hungary, Peter Magyar has defeated by a huge margin, landslide victory over Viktor Orban in Hungary. What does that mean? That means Hungary is going to be a lot less friendly to the Russians and a lot less hostile to the European Union. If you've been following European politics, which I don't really follow it that closely, but Hungary has been a major thorn in the side of the EU. They have blocked a lot of things like loans to Ukraine, weapons packages to Ukraine. They've been much more friendly towards the U.S. and towards Russia, for that matter. Well, with Viktor Orban out of there, and it looks like a two-thirds majority for Peter Magyar's party here, already the European Union is looking to unblock a 90 billion euro loan to Ukraine that had previously been held up by Hungary. So you've got the European Union scored a win over the weekend. And last but not least, we got Volkswagen. Now, this is now the second European automaker to report a big decline in sales to both China and the U.S. There's two different things going on here simultaneously. You've got the flood of Chinese-made electric vehicles eating into their market share in the Chinese market, which is very important. And you've also got U.S. tariffs taking a chunk out of their U.S. sales. Mercedes reported last week. We didn't cover it on this channel. We ended up cutting it from the stack. But Mercedes reported a very similar result last week. Now we've got Volkswagen. European automakers are just getting hammered from both ends here. Guys, we got a lot to cover this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance. Don't forget the like button and the subscribe button for the YouTube algorithm so you can come back and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this one every single day. And right now, stocks, again, reacting to the news, but reacting pretty well. We've got the S&P is down 33 points, about a half a percent. It's actually bounced quite a bit in these last couple of minutes here. all things considering, considering how ferociously it rallied on news of those peace talks, you think it would be selling off a lot harder on news of those talks breaking down. But for now, the S&P is holding up pretty well. The Dow, meanwhile, not doing as well. Down 440 points, 0.92% to the downside. Goldman Sachs earnings and the decline in Goldman Sachs is a big reason why the Dow is being hit particularly hard this morning. This is when Goldman reported here and big decline happened after that. And the NASDAQ is off by 105 points or 0.42%, more in line with what the S&P is doing. Again, reacting pretty well to all things going on in the Middle East this morning. The U.S. dollar is a little bit stronger here, higher by 26 basis points at 98.91. Looking over at the bond market, we've got yields are higher, but they were a lot higher a few minutes ago. So we're actually seeing yields come back down here. Bonds are rallying, or at least pairing their losses at the moment. The 30-year yield is at 4.919. That's higher by only a half a point. The 10-year yield is at 4.321. That's only higher by a half a point. It was up by 5 basis points earlier today. The 2-year yield, 3.808. Again, up by a little more than half a point. And the 1-month is unchanged at 3.645. So the bond market is taking this news in the Middle East very well as well this morning. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got metals are trading like risk assets again. It's unusual, but you know, when you get a stronger dollar and higher interest rates, metal doesn't like that. So for the time being, gold and silver are reacting like a risk asset to the breakdown in peace talks in the Middle East. It probably won't do that forever, but it has something I've noticed since the war began that's been happening. We've got spot gold is at $47.24, lower by $23, or about a half a percent. June COMEX gold futures, $47.46, down by almost $41, or 0.85% lower. Spot silver is at $74.02, down $1.88, or 2.5%. May COMEX silver futures are at $74.07, down by $2.41, or 3.15% lower. But I still like the shiny. Copper is off by 0.3%. Platinum down by 1.17%. Palladium a little bit higher by 0.2%. And WTI crude is moving sharply higher this morning, up by $7 now, $103.65, or 7.3% higher. Let's take a look at the move in oil. Let's zoom in a little bit here. Here was that big drop that we got early last week on the announcement of the ceasefire, right? The price of oil crashed significantly from $109, went as low as $90, and then bounced back up. We have now recovered about 2/3 of that decline. We're at about $103.76 here. This is West Texas Intermediate, by the way. So still not fully recovering from the news of give peace a chance, but you could tell the market is now more skeptical that these peace talks are going to yield any real results. Now, we've also got something interesting that happened over the weekend. We got this headline from Reuters. This is 2 days ago. Pakistan sends fighter jets to Saudi Arabia under mutual defense pact. Now, this is very important here. Pakistan, Islamic country. Also, Pakistan has been neutral up until this point. They hosted the peace talks. They were acting as the middleman while the U.S. and Iran were passing notes back and forth like kids in a classroom in high school. It was really adorable, you know, passing notes like that. Well, now Pakistan is sending fighter jets to an airbase that the Iranians had previously bombed. This didn't get a lot of attention yesterday, but I think this is important. Pakistan has sent fighter jets and other military forces to Saudi Arabia to boost security under a defense pact between the two countries, the Saudi Defense Ministry said on Saturday, as Islamabad hosted talks aimed at ending the war. Saudi Arabia's defense ministry said in a statement that Pakistani fighter jets and support aircraft had arrived at King Abdulaziz Air Base in the country's eastern province. That is an airbase that has been hit repeatedly by the Iranians, or at least they've tried to hit it repeatedly. They did hit it in March pretty hard. So now there's going to be Pakistani fighter jets on the ground there. Riyadh and Islamabad signed a mutual defense pact in September of 2025, committing both sides to treat any aggression against either country as an attack on both. That significantly deepened a decades-old security partnership. You know, another thing that has struck me as odd since this war began, besides the fact that the Iranian ships were somehow allowed to pass through while nobody else's were, was the fact that all of these countries that are getting hit by Iranian missiles, none of them were shooting back. Saudi Arabia never shot back. The UAE never shot back. Qatar, Kuwait, Iraq. None of them ever shot back at the Iranians. They just took the hits. Possibly here signaling that Saudi Arabia will not be so passive. We're fighting to resume again, because now you've got Pakistani jets on their air bases, as if Saudi Arabia would evoke that mutual defense treaty where an attack on one is an attack against both. Also important to note here, there are some financial implications, big ones. In 2018, Riyadh announced a $6 billion support package for Pakistan, including a $3 billion deposit at the central bank and $3 billion worth of oil supplies on deferred payment. Pakistan's central bank has been surviving on credit for years here. And then even now, as we've got Pakistani military assets heading to Saudi Arabia, we also got this one developing over the last few days. Pakistan is in talks with Saudi Arabia and China after the UAE's loan move. The United Arab Emirates wants their money back, and it's a lot of money. And again, this has something to do with the Iran conflict. I don't know what, but Pakistan is in discussions with Saudi Arabia and China for financial support to compensate for a loan of about $3 billion that Islamabad will be forced to pay back to the UAE, people familiar with the matter said. The talks involve loans and investment, the people said, asking not to be identified because the talks are private. The amount of support under discussion is more than $3.5 billion, one of the people said. Pakistan failed to reach an agreement with the UAE to roll over the debt for the first time in 7 years. Islamabad will now repay the amount by the end of this month, putting significant strain on its forex reserves, which stand at about $16 billion, enough to cover just 3 months of imports. So the UAE has been making these loans to Pakistan for years. Some of these go as far back as the 1990s. For whatever reason, all of a sudden the UAE says we want our $3 billion back. And Pakistan's central bank doesn't have a lot of foreign exchange reserves, so this could potentially threaten the Pakistani currency. So they're looking to take out another loan from China and Saudi Arabia in order to raise the dollars to pay back the UAE. Again, a lot of moving parts here, a lot of pre-existing credit agreements, mutual defense treaties and things like that happening. A lot of developments over the weekend in the Middle East. Also going on this morning, let's look at the price of Bitcoin. We talked in the opening about World Liberty Financial. Bitcoin's currently trading about $71,134. That is just off the lows of yesterday. We went into the weekend, we were as high as $74,000 on Saturday. Then the story broke about World Liberty Financial. Bitcoin sold off a couple of thousand dollars to about $70,700. Also, that happened right around the time the peace talks with Iran broke down. So I'm not sure what Bitcoin is probably reacting to the Iran story more so than World Liberty. But what happened with World Liberty could absolutely spill over to Bitcoin in the same way that Terra Luna collapse did. So let's talk about that a little bit. Trump-linked World Liberty Project faces investor revolt. World Liberty Financial, a Trump family crypto venture, is facing an investor revolt that includes billionaire backer Justin Sun, who accused the project of secretly building controls that let insiders freeze token holders' funds. Sun, who poured tens of millions of dollars into World Liberty in exchange for a presidential pardon for the SEC investigation and the lawsuits into Tron. Oh, but sure, that's unrelated. He called the project a trap masquerading as a door in a post on X on Sunday. Yeah, couldn't happen to a nicer guy, Justin Sun. But here's the real story. World Liberty has said it deposited 3 billion of their WLFI tokens into Dolomite, a lending protocol, and borrowed $75 million in stablecoins against them. They then moved those $75 million in stable coins over to Coinbase, which would suggest that they liquidated them for regular fiat dollars. Dolomite's co-founder, Corey Kaplan, also serves as World Liberty's chief technology officer. Little bit of a conflict of interest there. Also, that $75 million that they borrowed in stable coins from Dolomite, that virtually drained everything from the liquidity pool on the Dolomite platform, which means other people who have their money tied up in Dolomite are now not able to withdraw it. They screwed over a lot of people here. If World Liberty's price drops far enough, the concern is that the position could be liquidated, dumping tokens onto the market and accelerating the very sell-off investors fear. Many posters on X have expressed concerns about the loan on Dolomite. As a project, using your own token as collateral for loans is very bad, said Morten Christensen, a WLFI investor who also runs airdropalert.com. It puts fear, doubt, and anger into investors' minds. And again, I can't help but point out, you've got a sitting U.S. president is involved here. All right, this is exactly the kind of crap that has happened in all the other previous crypto cycles, right? You get a halving, the price starts to rise, people start to FOMO in, and then the fraudsters come out of the woodwork, they take it too far, and you get collapses and the price crashes. But this is the first time we've had a sitting U.S. president involved. That bears mention here, guys. Now, look, why is this such a big deal? Because this is the price chart of World Liberty Financial Token. It started out around 31 cents in August of last year. It's currently worth less than 8 cents. And at the time this loan was made, it was worth somewhere between 15 and 12 cents. So the value of the collateral in this big loan on Dolomite, it's lost somewhere between 20 and 50% of its value already if it keeps dropping. All those billions of WLFI tokens are going to get dumped on the open market, crashing its price. World Liberty Dolomite probably won't be able to recover the amount borrowed if they do that, which means the Dolomite token also goes to zero and that platform collapses. It's almost identical to what happened with Terra Luna. All right, shifting gears to private credit. The Fed seeks details on U.S. banks' exposure to private credit firms. The Federal Reserve is asking major U.S. banks for details about their exposure to private credit following a surge in redemptions from the funds and a rise in troubled loans in the industry, according to people with knowledge of the matter. The queries by Fed examiners are intended to assess the level of stress in the private credit industry and the potential for it to spill over to the wider financial system, said the people requesting anonymity. Among the queries the Fed has been incorporating into its routine oversight process, the central bank has been seeking detail on the debt private credit funds have taken on from banks. In good times, that debt can juice returns and make private credit funds more exciting. In bad times, it risks exposing banks to losses. During the GFC, we passed all these rules that said banks aren't allowed to make these risky loans. So the private credit funds were like, we'll make the loans. Where are we going to get the money? The same banks that aren't allowed to make those loans. And somehow we're acting like we've mitigated risk. We haven't. We've just installed a middleman in the same risk dynamic. The Treasury Department is also questioning the insurance industry about exposures to private credit, said people with knowledge of the separate discussions. You may recall not too long ago, Blue Owl, right when they permanently froze redemptions in one of their private credit funds, they also said, oh, but don't worry, we sold, I think it was $1.4 billion worth of our loans, or maybe it was $140 million, I forget the number. But they're like, we sold some of our loans and we got like 99 cents on the dollar for them. See, these assets are worth what we're marking them at. What they didn't say was it was their own insurance company that they sold those loans to. They sold the assets from their right pocket to their left pocket. It was all a scripted act. And that draws attention to the point that these institutions have bought insurance companies and then used their balance sheets as dumping grounds for these toxic assets. Now the Fed wants details. How exposed are you? How many of grandma's annuities are going to be totally hosed because of what you guys have done? The questions are one of the strongest signals yet that U.S. regulators are working to get a handle on the scale of the strain in private credit, which has ballooned to a $1.8 trillion industry marketed first to institutional investors and increasingly now to individuals. And I would also point out President Trump's executive order on democratizing access to private assets also clears the way for this crap to be dumped into people's 401ks. Something he's going to live to regret. That also may explain this move in Goldman Sachs stock. Goldman Sachs is currently down 4.2%, trading at $870 after reporting earnings. You can see big drop there right around 7:20 a.m. That coincided with that big drop in the Dow Jones Industrial Average because Goldman is a big input to the Dow. I was trying to figure out why would Goldman stock be down so much? And honestly, everything I read said Goldman had a fantastic quarter. The only thing I could find that even hinted at what went wrong was in Seeking Alpha, which is not a source I typically put a lot of stock in, but they're the only ones even attempting to identify the cause today. So Goldman Sachs Q1 earnings beat, but net interest income and credit loss provisions disappoint. Goldman Sachs stock slipped 3.5%, now 4.2% on Monday pre-market after Wall Street Bank's Q4 net interest income fell short and its provision for credit losses came in higher than consensus estimates. The bottom line, though, exceeded expectations, helped by strong top-line results in its global banking and markets division, which offset a Q over Q dip in wealth management revenue. Look, their earnings were great. It was like their second best quarter ever. But the only negatives I could find, their net interest income was $3.56 billion. That was a little bit less than the consensus of $3.67 billion. It's also down from their Q4, $3.71 billion. Also, their provisions for credit losses are $315 million. That was more than the $166 million that was anticipated by this, was it Visible Alpha consensus. So slightly higher provisions for credit losses combined with a miss on net interest income. Maybe that's why Goldman Sachs stock was down so much. But I would also point out that the whole banking sector is down this morning. All the big banks are down about 1.5% on this Fed story. So it's possible it's the Federal Reserve private credit thing that's dragging Goldman down after earnings. We'll just have to wait and see. The other banks will be reporting later this week. And we've got big developments in Europe. The political landscape definitely shifted in Europe over the weekends. And yes, this has implications for this march into World War III that we're all watching. Hungary's opposition landslide win heralds reforms and a thaw in EU ties. Peter Magyar's landslide victory in Sunday's Hungarian election has handed his center-right Tisza party, I'm sure I'm mispronouncing that, a sweeping mandate that will give it a free hand to enact reforms, bolster the rule of law, and potentially unlock billions in European Union funding. Let's see here. The election had long been anticipated as the most market-sensitive in Europe this year, given the Euroskeptic Orbán's frequent clashes with Brussels during his 16-year rule over issues ranging from immigration to his closeness to Russia. Orbán had expressed confidence throughout the election campaign, despite lagging in opinion polls, saying his goal was to protect Hungary's national identity and traditional Christian values within the EU, while denying any wrongdoing. But the markets had been signaling for weeks that investors expected change. The share prices of companies linked to Orbán fell sharply, while market volatility gauges indicated that big currency moves were likely after the election. Magyar, addressing jubilant supporters chanting Europe, Europe, after Orbán conceded defeat, pledged to make Hungary a strong EU and NATO ally and rebuild ties marred by years of conflict. You can already see them making moves here. EU aims to unblock 90 billion euro Ukraine loan after Orbán loss. Orbán had been the one who blocked that loan to Ukraine after the Russians had hit a natural gas pipeline in Ukraine and gas flows into Hungary were cut off. Orbán accused the Ukrainians of dragging their feet on the repairs for that, and then he blocked the loan in retaliation for that. Already the EU is moving to send more money to Ukraine now that Orbán has been defeated. So this was definitely a win for the EU over the weekend. And last but not least, Volkswagen car sales drop on steep declines in China and the US. That is now the second major European automaker to have this effect. Volkswagen's global car sales fell in the first quarter, weighed down by a slump in China where competition from local brands has intensified. Deliveries declined 4% to 2.05 million units, the automaker said Monday. It pointed to headwinds, including an overall declining Chinese market and tariffs in the U.S. The pain was most acute in the world's two biggest auto markets. Shipments dropped by 15% in China and about a fifth in the U.S., with electric vehicle sales particularly hit hard in both regions. Gains of 4.2% in Western Europe and 7% in South America offered only partial relief. The figures add to growing evidence that European carmakers are losing ground in China. Mercedes-Benz last week reported a 27% sales slump there in the first quarter, an even steeper drop than the previous period. For Volkswagen, the pressure is especially intense. Domestic manufacturers such as BYD and Geely are churning out increasingly sophisticated models at aggressive prices, eroding Volkswagen's long-held advantage. Skoda, that's a Czech automaker, is preparing to exit China as buyers pivot towards locally made EVs, with Porsche suffering due to muted luxury spending. Not good time to be a European automaker this morning. And again, this is not just a Volkswagen story. This is industry-wide. And I just want to say thank you, everybody, for having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys so we can come back tomorrow and do this all over again. Thank you very much to my magnanimous Melonheads on Patreon, YouTube, and Buy Me a Coffee. I've got links down below should you feel so inclined. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time. Live small. Dream big.